Welcome to the Kids Joining Eternity podcast, where we help break the silence surrounding miscarriage, stillbirth, and infant loss. Some of the content may be graphic or triggering, but our goal is to help provide healing, hope, and education to the community. Hello, and welcome to the Kids Joining Eternity podcast. I am one of your hosts, Sydney Rashidzadeh. I'm joined by my fabulous co-host, Miss April Rutledge. April, hello.
Hello, Sydney.
And I should say, Happy New Year. This is our first podcast episode of 2024, the new year.
Which we are recording on the 86th day of January.
This is true. Since January is the longest year of the year. It's been okay. It honestly, even though January is historically ridiculously long, it's gone by faster than usual. Instead of feeling like, you know, 398 days, it only feels like 300 and I'd say 50. I'll shave a considerable amount of time off there. Did you have any wonderful New Year's resolutions, April?
So I made a New Year's resolution back in 2008, and it was to drink more water. And so I have just made that same New Year's resolution every year, and as to keep my 2008 New Year's resolutions.
Wow.
I'm really struggling.
I've had the drink more water resolution for, I would say, a solid 5 years now. And it hasn't taken yet. Maybe we'll get there. My bodily fluids are made of Red Bull and coffee, and that's it.
Well, you are a pre-K teacher, so.
Yeah. So, but I do need to add some water. But I'm really excited to get us started in 2024. You know, this podcast basically has three types of episodes. We have our episodes that are just me and you, which are lovely, fun, yeah. Great. We have episodes where we get to hear stories, people's stories of their experiences with loss. And I always really love those because I feel like those help so many people who are going through it by knowing that they're not alone. But third type of episode, you know, we do is where we talk to people in our community. We connect with our community members, people that we are lucky enough to have out there providing support and help to people. And we've got a great guest tonight. She is with Oklahoma Family Network, and she is a OU Children's NICU Family Support Partner. And so I want to welcome to the podcast Marlon Carpio. Hi, Marlon.
Hello, Sydney. How are you? Hi, April.
Great.
Hello, Marlon. Welcome.
Well,
I'm excited to be here with you guys.
Great. We're so happy that you could come on. Your job title alone, It's heavy. It's a deep, it's serious stuff. Tell the listeners, if you would, about what you do.
Okay, so I am the OU Children's NICU Family Support Partner with Oklahoma Family Network in Oklahoma City. I office at OU Children's, and my main focus is working with families that are currently in the NICU. And after that, I also do follow-up calls just to reach out to them and see how they're doing, if they need any resources or any support after their NICU stay.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's great. I mean, you know, it's a service people realize they even need until they're there in that moment. And you know, we've made so many strides over the past 20 years as far as NICU care and advances and being able to help these babies, but it doesn't make it any easier to navigate a NICU. And that is where you come in.
Yes, it can be very tough, especially for those, like you said, that don't know. That's what I'm here for, to spread the word that we are here and we are here to support them in any way that the family might need.
How did you get started with this line of work?
So I have three children. I have an 11-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 6-month-old baby boy.
Oh, wow, you're busy.
Two girls and my baby boy. And both of my daughters have medical health needs. My oldest, she has kidney disease, epilepsy. And my youngest, she was born at 34 weeks via emergency C-section due to placenta abruption. So she has been 3 months in life support at the NICU just a couple of days after she was born. And after that, everything started. She had RSV due to the intubation. Her airway messed up. So that's how everything started. I was 20 years old when I had her, so I really didn't know that all these resources existed. Probably they were out there, but I was going through a postpartum depression, and I just didn't open up to nobody. Even though I had all of this amazing support, I still do, which I'm so grateful for and thankful. But I was just on my own. I just didn't want nothing to do with the baby. It was just me. I was just thinking about myself. But that's how everything started with my daughter. I'm her biggest advocate because I want to speak up for her. She's also autistic. Mm-hmm. And my beautiful coworker, Erica Herrera, she's so amazing. I love her. She was the one who told me about this job. She was like, I think you might be a good candidate for this because you've been, it's like you're the nurse for these kids.
Yeah.
And I might not have a degree in nursing, but I feel like I'm a nurse.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's so amazing to hear you talk about your experience of being a NICU parent and having a child that has medical needs and different needs. What better person to fulfill your job than you. You're an invaluable resource to those parents. When I went through my loss, my daughter was in the NICU for 6 days before she passed. We didn't have that. It was my husband and I and our family and the doctors. There was no support in that way. So the fact that you're doing such important work, it's great to hear. When you know that a baby in the NICU is probably not going to make it, how do you transition your support? What does that look like?
So we are orphan. We work as a team, and we start gathering all the information to assist the family and help with their needs. And we try our best to find any other resources that might be available for the family and to get some weight off their shoulders. My good friend Melanie, I've been... My first year started here at OU 2 years ago. I had more than four babies passing away within my first year. So it was very tough. It was very, very tough because I was pregnant and having, you know, those babies. But Melanie walked me through and she helped me. She guided me with all the resources there is available, which I didn't know, which I'm grateful now to know, to have known Melanie. Mm-hmm. And she told me, how can they help me? So just by asking questions, I'm an open book. I love to ask questions. I'm really needy. So if I know there's a mom needs something, I'm everywhere. I get on Facebook. I get on Instagram. Even on TikTok, there's sometimes on TikTok have good information.
Yeah.
Like resources. Social media has been my great help with all these resources for my NICU family, especially going through hard times with their babies. So that's what pretty much what we do with the transition.
How many?
We talk about that a lot, about the social media and it being such a great thing for women or families in this situation, because it truly does open up your network of support nationwide, and your village grows exponentially when you find those people and those resources and support.
Yes, for sure. Not only that, but asking questions, you know. I mean, I know, like, I didn't know about Melanie, but I was asking questions, and that's how I got connected to her. I didn't even know that was a thing, you know, because, like I said, I was just so focused on my kids, and that if you don't ask questions, then you might not know. And there's some parents that think we don't have resources, but there are resources available. It's just a lot of parents are embarrassed to ask, especially with the language barrier. I've seen a lot of that. So if I don't have the resource, I ask my coworker, hey, do you know anybody that might help me with this? And if she doesn't know it, then she'll ask someone else. So it's like a little chain that we go.
Yeah. I was going to ask, how many families do you typically work with at a time in the NICU? What is, do you have a certain caseload of, and what does that look like?
We don't really have a number. Uh-huh. It could be up to 10 families, 15 families, 20 families.
Wow.
But of course, not all of them answer, you know, they're overwhelmed, but I'm still there. I don't like blowing up their phones, but even if they don't answer me, I send a message. I introduce myself through a text message, because most of them don't answer my calls because they don't know my number.
Mm-hmm.
So I just text them a message. I send them a picture with our OFN NICU flyer. And I tell them who I am. And if they don't answer, I'll follow up in within 2 or 3 days. Hey, just stopping by and see how you're doing. Or I'll make a call.
Yeah. So
there's some parents that couldn't answer, and there's some parents that don't, and it's okay, you know. I was there in the situation. I was overwhelmed. I didn't want to talk to nobody. Yeah. They just gave birth, you know, especially the moms. So they don't want to talk. There's a lot of moms.
Well, and a lot of times when you're dealing with a crisis and you are overwhelmed, you're too focused on the crisis to examine your own feelings and what you're going through. And I love that you continue to follow up with these families, because, you know, they need that. And they need to know that even months down the road, that there's somebody there that can still help them and support them.
Oh, yes, for sure. And not only that, but they might be going through hard times that day, and maybe tomorrow they'll be like, oh, I remember this lady from OFN texting me. Let me reach back.
Yeah.
So that's why I like to not blow up their phones, but, you know, follow up with them, even if they don't text me back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're talking a lot about, you know, you finding resources and things to help the parents. What are some off the top of your head that you can think of that we can tell some of our listeners about that they might not know?
So our main one, it would be, I usually do a referral for Sooner Success. We're really connected with them. A lot of them don't know about Sooner Star. Mm-hmm. Their kid or child at age 3. So that's the first thing I tell them. The sooner, the better. Because I think it is the only program that a child at such a young age. So the earlier they get the services, the better it would be for the kiddo. And after that, as soon as what I like about Sooner Star is that they'll follow up and they'll help the family further with more information, even with therapy, with enrolling them to school, like a Head Start. But that's my goal.
Okay.
Programs.
Yeah, I love Sooner Start. It's such a great resource for families who have kiddos that, you know, will have needs in the future, whether they're educational or it's physical therapy or occupational or speech, everything. It's great.
Yes.
And they really do support families, and it's overwhelming to go through that. And so, and the early intervention, and then as a teacher, I teach pre-K. Well, I can't say enough about early intervention. It's so important, to, to give that to our kids.
Yes, and I think it just depends on the case too, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody has different needs. So if I get a family later on that with a kiddo that just been diagnosed with autism, we have coworkers that have their own support group, and they can help.
Oh.
One of our coworkers have a support group for moms with kids with autism. And what I love about her is that every month she meets up with the moms, and they just have breakfast. They go out and have breakfast, and they meet and interact with each other, just so they know they're not alone, you know?
Yeah.
Yes. It's all about those connections and feeling connected and feeling supported. I mean, and that's the whole reason why we're here doing this podcast. So, you know,
exactly.
we can reach those people that need to hear it and to know that they do have that support.
And also, you know, to know if you're going through a pregnancy right now and you, for whatever reason, you know that there's going to be some issues perhaps. And so people knowing that people like you are out there, so that if they are in that situation where their child is in the NICU, they know to kind of keep their eye peeled for you, you know.
Yes,
and I think it's
sure.
really great for people to know that you guys are there and doing
yes.
the important work.
And that's
doing.
That's the first thing that I tell my families once I meet them in person. I just tell them that I've been there personally,
mm-hmm.
and I'm here professionally. I deal with postpartum depression, and it's hard. It's real.
Yeah.
We don't really talk
yeah.
about postpartum. We're when the baby's sick, or like my baby was in life support, everybody was so worried about my baby. Like, how's the baby doing? And nobody asked about me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one I think
yeah.
I learned.
Yeah.
And I take care of my moms. Like, how are you doing, mom? How are you healing? Have you been to your first postpartum appointment? Not only for the child, but for them.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's so important, because I
somebody's
feel like
somebody's got to take care of the moms.
Exactly. And
else.
And you spend almost 10 months, everyone's, you know, asking about you, checking on you, and then it goes to from all of the attention and all the care to
mm-hmm.
absolutely nothing. And then just hormonally after you give birth. I never had postpartum depression, but I can definitely say I had the blues. It's such a confusing time. You're supposed to be happy. And, you know, obviously if you have a kiddo who's sick and they're in the NICU, it's unbelievably hard.
Plus you have a life, you know, you have a life outside the hospital, especially if you have kiddos.
Oh,
kiddo,
yeah.
It's hard. Bills don't wait.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be paid somehow. So some moms have to drive far. I have moms that live in Tulsa. They come from all the state, you know. So
yeah.
I have a mom that's from California. She was here visiting
oh, wow.
a friend, and she gave birth here in Oklahoma. So she had no family here.
Yeah.
So,
wow, that's intense. I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
And I know it's just like how guilty you feel. Like you said, life doesn't stop. The bills don't stop. You don't get a break on these things. You feel like you can't leave the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I didn't leave it for 6 days, didn't sleep, nothing. And man, it just, but eventually if you do have to leave, and it makes you feel like garbage and the guilt and gosh, it's so hard.
Yes, and I think that's what happened to me after everything I went through personally with my husband. My husband, he would sleep on the floor and after get up at 5 a.m, go to work every day. And even like that, he got fired from his job. It's so crazy, you know. I was just like, okay, everything's going down. He's
yeah.
not working. I'm not working. And we had to make it happen. It would hurt him leaving the hospital,
mm-hmm.
leaving her there. But we had to pay bills. We had to pay our mortgage. You know, we had another kid at home, so
yeah.
it had to get done. And that's why it makes me value all my families and love them, because I've been there. I know how it is to have postpartum depression, not to have money, your babies at the hospital, not all the babies make it, you know, and all the stress.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is easy. This will probably be really easy for you to answer, but, you know, what are some things that NICU parents need from their family and their friends for support? What, in your opinion, is what do they need the most?
My main thing is just be there. Just listen to their concerns. Sometimes you don't have to say nothing. Just listen. Just be there for them. And if you know someone's out there struggling, and if you know you might have the help, even if you don't believe it will work out, just ask questions, look for resources. Some moms are embarrassed to ask, especially those moms with postpartum depression.
Yeah.
Even though they're in need, they won't ask. So you just be there for them, follow their cues, and I think that's the main support. That what else, you know, could you give but being there?
Right.
Even if it's not physically, you can be there emotionally, physically, mentally.
Yeah, for sure. But it just,
I mean, all it takes is that text, you know, just send in the text.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like that's the thing too, that I always try to remember when people are going through something like this, that they just need to know that you're ready and available whenever they are. And a friend of mine just recently announced that she lost her baby. And so I messaged her, you know, and we chatted a little bit. And she knows that I'm there if she needs to talk. And sometimes she reaches out and sometimes she doesn't, and it's okay because she knows that I am there ready when she's ready. And then again, I have another friend who, you know, I know, like, she is isolating herself. She does not want to talk, and I can just respect that. But I think that's the most important part, is just letting them know that you're there. And everybody's different. Some people want to talk to everybody, and some people don't want to open up at all. And like you said, with the moms that you have to kind of chase down, like, you don't want to harass them, but at the same point, you're like, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, eventually they will reach out, you know. I have moms that graduated from the NICU and went home, and they reach out to me 4 months later.
It wasn't exactly your title, but I always like to tell a story. There was a social worker at the hospital where my daughter died, and a year later she helped us. She was wonderful. And then a year later I had my son Atlas, and at the same hospital, and she was there the day that he was born, and she came and visited us, and it was just it was a sweet moment. And I appreciated her so much, and it was nice to have her, to see her on a happy occasion, you know? But yeah, well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast and sharing about what you do. And, thank you for all that you do. And it's how special it must be for those mothers that are going through the hardest thing you can go through, to know that there's someone there who truly understands what they're going through. That must be so comforting to them, to know that, like, you're not just there filling a job. You've been through it.
Yes.
You've lived it.
So. And that's what WFN is. It's nothing but staff who have either a sibling or a kiddo with special needs. Because we know, like you said, we've been through it. We know personally.
Yeah.
And this is my part-time job, so I try to have a full-time job.
This is your part? Oh my gosh, that's a heavy job.
Wait, what I do. This is a part-time gig. Holy cow.
Yes, I only work 10 hours a week.
What else do you do?
I work with Oklahoma City Public Schools. I'm a parent educator.
Okay.
It's almost the same thing.
I was going to say.
Versus for the parents.
Either way you slice it, you're a brave woman. And thank you so much.
When they offered me this job, I was like, well, I'm doing it already with my other job, so might as well add something else.
Exactly. It's just a different scenery behind you, right?
Yes, definitely.
Hopefully the other one is a little bit more cheerful.
Yeah.
For sure.
But working in public schools, you never know. I get it.
Yes.
It's
tough.
Yeah.
We're here surviving.
Marlon, thank you so much for being our guest today. It was so great talking to you. And thank you for all the wonderful work that you do for those NICU families and those babies, because it is a very, very important job that you have.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you ladies having me tonight.
Absolutely. We are so excited that you could join us. This has been Sydney and April for the Kids Joining Eternity podcast, helping to break the silence surrounding stillbirth, miscarriage, and infant loss. If you know somebody who is experiencing this, please reach out to kidsjoiningeternity.org for resources and support.
Thank you for listening to the Kids Joining Eternity podcast. For more information, please visit kidsjoiningeternity.org.